Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, where we explore the human side of analytics to help amplify the impacts of those out to change the world. With me, Alexandra Mannerines. Joined by Erin McKenna from the St. John Learning Exchange in Canada. And Erin is going to bring a very helpful technique for making data approachable and engaging and inviting those who have something really to contribute, even when they may not know that they are truly part of your data experience. So Erin is going to introduce us to the concept of her data parties and how she has really brought data to life within her organization and the difference that it has made.
I am thrilled to be joined again by Erin McKenna, and she is going to dive much more deeply into how her organization worked to really implement a data plan and program and culture within her nonprofit. So let's meet Erin again. Do you mind just introducing yourself again, Erin, for those who maybe didn't hear our part one of this series?
Sure. Happy to. So my name is Erin McKenna. I work at the Learning Exchange in St. John, New Brunswick, Canada. So it's a pretty small organization located in a pretty small city. We have about 26 staff, and our programming, we work with youth and adults. We have empowerment programming. We have education programming in the form of GED, as well as an adult high school diploma, which is an alternative high school graduation pathway. We offer skills training. So that's through project-based learning. We have transition to employment services, working one-on-one coaching individuals on the whole process of getting and then keeping a job. And we also own and operate 4 social enterprises. So we're small, but I think we're pretty mighty.
That's an understatement. So I want to start with, you know, we got to hear a little bit with Alberta about the Blueprint and PDI program and about how that's leading you towards some really extraordinary work in taking your data to the next level. Mm-hmm. But I want to back up just a little bit and hear about, where did you come from? You know, what did your organization look like before you engaged with the PDI program? And look at what was the state of data and insights or information prior to that?
Sure. So we, between 2015 and 2019, we underwent a social return on investment analysis, which was a long process, but it was a big eye-opening process. So we had some processes in place around collecting data. We knew what our key organizational outcomes were, and at least what we were working toward. We knew kind of how to track things. And we had implemented in 2019, going into 2020, a new database. So we were in the process of transitioning all of our 5,000 spreadsheets into one central database, which definitely was a learning curve. We also had just implemented a new funding strategy for the organization. So we used to be funded very piecemeal, like each program received funding, but we had one key government funder. And so we entered over a long process. We undergo an outcomes-based funding model, where really our main government funder, the Department of Post-Secondary Education, Training and Labor here in New Brunswick, is funding our organization. So really funding our model, focused on some key outcomes, specifically around employment, transition to employment and employment retention. And then we have a bit more freedom now around how some of those outcomes are achieved. So a lot more ease of transition between programming and things like that. So we're kind of at this place where we were poised to make some changes to our intake process, because now we didn't have to do it just for one program. We could think more about like branches of programming. We were ready to start seeing like, is this database working? Did I, who had no experience like building a database, did I even know what I was doing? Was I doing things properly? We've been using the database for about a year and a half at that point, almost 2 years. And it was a godsend during COVID when we all went home, because our old database, you had to be in the building to access it. So this one we're able to access anywhere, which is great. But were we really capturing the info we wanted? Was the info that we were getting even telling us what we wanted to know about our organization? So I think we had a lot of questions, yeah, but unsure how to get there and how to answer them, because I have an interest in these things, but I'm not an evaluator or a data specialist by any means. I have a degree in history and a master's in education. So, yeah, needed some help, some guidance.
And I hope everyone's hearing that, because I think this is one of those recurring myths around data, is that you have to have lots of letters following your name in order to be any good with data. You have to have, you know, the credentials and lots of training and be a data type, a very math oriented or numbers oriented person. That's not necessarily true. Here you 100%. Are leading this initiative. And what stood out to me is, I think what was important is you had lots of questions. Mm-hmm. That actually is probably the most important driving factor. And you sort of start this process of figuring that out. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about those outcomes? You talked about that you did, as an organization, sit down and work both internally and with your funding agency of what are these key outcomes? So do you mind describing those a little bit and how you actually measure them?
Sure. So, I mean, the first outcome that we look at is employment achievement. So attachment to employment and then employment retention. At the Learning Exchange, we started out as a literacy organization doing family literacy. And we've evolved a lot, and we've always evolved with the input of our learners. So it was always what they wanted. We tried to see if there wasn't an organization doing that, how do we implement those programs so that we can take people to the next level? So we knew that employment, attachment, and retention was one of our key outcomes. And our main funder also very interested in that. We also see things like completion of a GED or a high school diploma as another key outcome. Other outcomes would be improvements in areas around skills. So especially essential skills and soft skills. We're very, very passionate about soft skills at the Learning Exchange. And we believe that that's the make or break when it comes to keeping a job, which at the end of the day is what's going to create long-lasting change for individuals. In 2022, we amalgamated with the Women's Empowerment Network here in St. John. And so they brought a whole host of empowerment programming around improving self-esteem, confidence, leadership skills, specifically for women at this point in time. So we knew that those were sort of the main outcomes. The other thing that we knew was an outcome of our programming, but we didn't know how to measure it because none of our funders were asking us to report on it, was something to do with quality of life. And so that was one of the huge questions we had moving into the project with Alberta and the team at Blueprint. How do we measure quality of life? And how do we understand if we are having an impact on someone's quality of life and in what ways? So that was sort of one of the things that I'm going to talk a little bit about over sort of our process around that today. Yeah. So those are sort of the outcomes that we knew because these were our programs. So that's what we knew they were leading towards.
Mm-hmm. And we get to meet you sort of mid-journey. Clearly, there's a lot of work that has gone on in this organization over many years leading up to this point. And you can see that in a lot of the things that you're talking about in terms of making that move towards centralizing your data and being able to bring all of those points together. I'm really impressed by this discussion of sort of the outcomes-based funding, where the idea is we understand that multiple programs may be necessary to see measurable change, and we're focused on that change that matters, that we've said we're committed to. And you have to have that sort of underpinning of data that connects all across your different programs. Participants need to be able to have their information drawn together across all those different programs. So you can see a lot of that infrastructure work starting to happen. But to your point, this is where it comes together and really is going to actually power those insights around your outcomes and saying, are we making the difference that we're wanting to make? The outcome measures that you're talking about, they truly are outcome measures. Mm-hmm. Things that some people may say are not completely under your control. You know, how can you say, well, we'll be responsible for somebody getting and keeping a job, right? There's so many factors, and yet that's what you're committing to. And so therefore that's how you're measuring your success. And I love that you're adding that there's that more intangible quality of life piece, because why do we actually care about a job? Do we care that we have a job? Like, no, we actually care that that job gives us a certain quality of life and a freedom and whatever that might be. And so I love that you're adding about that. So let's go ahead and sort of move into that next phase of now you're working with Blueprint under the PDI program. Tell us some of those changes that you started to make as you moved into that next phase of data management and analysis.
So, yeah. So the first thing was we needed to find someone to lead the work. And so that was me. So I took on my role at the organization as program director. My role within our data work is the measurement, evaluation, and learning lead. And I think the key piece there is learning, because as an organization, and I think as often as a nonprofit, we feel like we're beholden to our funders, like to report on a certain outcome or to achieve a certain outcome. But it's important for us as individuals in the field to take a step back and sort of learn from the work that we're doing too, and figure out what's working, what's not, why. And so that's a big area of focus for me. So I think the first thing that I needed to be able to do was work on engaging the team. How do you engage people in data when a lot of the team hear the word data, and a lot of people that I know, colleagues, and they hear data and they get scared because it's a sort of nebulous, intangible thing. So I always try to say, like, data is just information. We all know what information is, and we're all comfortable with getting information, right? So getting the buy-in of the team was a huge piece of that. And so one of the things that I did and that we have now in place at the Learning Exchange is we throw data parties. So the first data party, people were very terrified. Like, what is this? Do I have to go? And I said, yes, it's a mandatory party. You're required to attend this party, which usually you're invited to a party. You don't have to go, but this time you did. But it was an opportunity to dive into our data and engage with our data in a way that was non-threatening. So the fancy word for that is participatory data analysis. But data party sounds like a lot more fun. And I think if you approach it from that lens, that it is a lot more fun. So in our first data party, which for me was really an engagement opportunity more than anything else, I wanted to look at a few different things. I wanted to look at things that the team care about. So number one, storytelling. What are the stories that we know from our learners? What do those stories tell us about what we're doing? Let's think about those stories. Not even really thinking about how we can methodically collect them or anything like that, but just, what are the stories? What are the stories that mean, and what do they mean to us? So that was one sort of area of focus. The next area of focus was quality of life, because I think that a lot of nonprofits say we help people with their quality of life, but then how do you really define that? And I think it means something different to everyone. So we had a whole section or session within that workshop around what is quality of life? What does it mean to you? And so that sort of laid the foundation for the next phase of work. And then the third thing that we did is we looked at one of our key activities. So as an organization, we do a lot of coaching. We believe in coaching. We've done a lot of training. The team has undergone non-directive coaching training with a group called Essential Impact. So we all have these skills, and then we're supposed to be tracking every time we coach someone, but really thinking about what is the coaching telling us. And so I used it more as a gut check opportunity rather than an opportunity to analyze the information, because what I saw very quickly when I pulled it is that a lot of the coaching that was recorded was being done by a very small portion of the staff. So rather than saying, this is what our coaching looks like, it was an opportunity to say, does this make sense? So I started out by asking, what do you think the main things that you spend time coaching on are? And people sort of came up with a list, maybe three ideas. And then I said, well, what would you say if I told you these are the things that our information in our database is telling us that we spend time on? And people were shocked. Rather than spending the majority of our time coaching people around housing, food insecurity, transportation issues, because these are the things we spend a lot of time on, it was like career changes. People were like, I've never talked to anyone about that. So, you know, you start realizing that if you're not able to capture that information in a meaningful way, and if it's not working in people's workflow naturally, then you're never really going to be able to prove the story. So that was the first one. And it was really just to get people thinking. And then at the end of that party, I had people pose questions. So just write down, what are the burning questions that you have, right? What is it that you want to find out? Because I can use those now as opportunities to further engage the team. The other thing that I had everyone do was set an individual goal. What's something that as an individual you want to work on for the next 6 months? And then we assigned accountability partners. So everyone had someone to keep them accountable. That wasn't me. Because if it's just me, then I feel like I'm nagging my team. And my team is very, very capable of doing their work independently. They don't need me to mother them, right? So that was sort of the first step in that whole engagement, because you needed buy-in. And so the first question is really like, is there value in us figuring these things out? And the team all agreed, yes, there is. Great. So we have the buy-in. So then the next step is, how are we going to do it? And I can't do it all on my own. So the Learning Exchange, we're a very small grassroots organization, and I didn't want to just develop some quality of life survey and say, and now we know how we're going to measure that. But I really wanted it to be a collaborative process. So we have a working group the DOG, we call ourselves, Data Analysis Working Group, and they're the ones that helped me lead that.
Just saying, I'm going to take this recording and just play it for everybody who is interested in taking that next step in their organization, because I mean, you've done such an extraordinary job building a process that is so poised to set you up for extraordinary success. And the idea that you didn't start with what should we be collecting? You had a question, you know, you knew, well, we want to measure quality of life. We also have these key outcomes that we know we want to measure, but you started with questions and what was important to your team and said, well, what do we want to be doing? Then only then did you move to the data, right? You didn't just dump all this data on their desk and there was no point where you're like, you're doing it wrong, right? Like no. It was never any, the idea that of leading from behind, right? The idea that you're letting your team direct this, but you're giving them the infrastructure and the support to really move it forward in a meaningful way. And so the fact, you know, that they could say, oh, wow, that data is not reflecting what we think it should be. And so we have that moment to say, well, are the data showing us something we didn't know? Or is it that we haven't quite perfected our data process? And the fact that you had that open door to have that conversation of, we get that data are not reality, but they are great hints towards it. And we want to make sure we're getting the best information out of it we can, because otherwise we won't know this. And then invited them to say, how do we make this data collection so seamlessly part of our process that it can happen almost naturally? Obviously, there's still effort involved, but bake it into the process rather than just let me burden you with all these extra things that you need to do. And then to end with, you know, what are the steps that we can personally be responsible for and take forward to help this continue to move along? Because you could get all the way to that and then everyone will look at you and be like, well, how are you fixing it, Erin?
Right? I'm not. We are fixing it.
Exactly. But I think that oftentimes, especially when you do get such an insightful champion like yourself leading this initiative, that everyone can turn to them and just be like, well, you're going to fix it, right? Like, this is going to be you and you're going to fix this. Mm-hmm. And that you were able to encourage them and have them be so bought in that they all see each of their space of how they're going to carry this forward as well. That this is an all of us project, and none of it is a one person project.
Yes, definitely. It had, for me, collaboration is the key, because nothing that we do at the Learning Exchange is a top-down approach, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we have a leadership team and we have our president CEO and we have, you know, the executive staff, but at the end of the day, we're all colleagues. And so unless it's something that has to be done, we want to collaborate, because mm-hmm. I believe ideas get better that way, right? My ideas are fine. Sometimes they're great, but not always. And I'm okay to admit that. Like, I have no problem learning from my own mistakes. And I think that that's really important too, is not being afraid to do something wrong. There's a quote by Nelson Mandela and it's, I either win or I learn. And so it's not about failing. It's about learning. And I love that, because I think that that's sort of what I believe when it comes to this kind of work. It's a learning process. And sometimes you're going to strike gold and that's amazing. But not always.
When you talked earlier about how soft skills are so important to retaining a job long term, but I think soft skills are also so critical to success with information, that we again think it's a very technical process. And there are components that are technical, but you mentioned that courage, right? This idea of not being afraid to fail, and humility, that willingness to say, yeah, got that wrong. Someone's going to have a better idea than I do. Or how can we learn together and improve this all together, and have that humility to say that I don't just have all the answers. I think all of those things are so essential, and probably even more essential than some of those technical components, in terms of, like you said, I don't know how to build a database, but I've built one that's working for everybody. I think the soft skills you've brought to this process have taken you leaps and bounds beyond what just a technically well-built data set would have done.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's true, because I think that you have to live what you're teaching. And so I do, right? And so when it came to, for us, we've rolled out this quality of life survey. It was a mm-hmm. long process. I mean, I kind of thought very naively, I think, I'm going to make a survey. It's going to be amazing. We'll have that rolling in 3 months max. Yeah. And I was like, that seems like a long time. And, you know, and then we're going to have 2 years of data before you know it. And it took us over a year to just mm-hmm. develop that. But it's okay to take time to do something, mm-hmm. because you had to get buy-in from the team. And then all of the outcomes that we decided upon, that was also a collaborative process, but not just amongst the team. It was involved our learners as well. So we surveyed them with questions like, what does quality of life mean to you? How do you know if your quality of life is changing. How has being at the Learning Exchange changed your quality of life? And there's a, it hasn't, it's worse, it's better option. And then why did you say that? Mm-hmm. And then the last question that we asked, and we asked this on our survey too, because I love this question, is what's something that you're proud of since you came to the Learning Exchange? Just gives you really interesting insights into sort of what the learners are thinking about their journeys with mm-hmm. us. And so we used those responses. We got almost 100 responses from learners to that survey, and then categorized everything. And I put it into buckets. And then I took that and I took the staff responses. They were asked similar questions in our data party. And then I brought it to the dog and we spent time with it saying, how do we group these things together? Mm-hmm. What are the themes that are coming out? Mm-hmm. And then we named them. We gave names to what are these themes. Mm-hmm. And then we thought, can we even have an impact on these things? Mm-hmm. So health is one of the areas that we are measuring, but we're not saying like my health has improved, because the Learning Exchange, mm-hmm. I can't impact someone's like chronic physical health condition. That's not going to be a thing. But the things that we're asking learners are, I recognize when maybe I need help with a situation and I seek resources. I ask questions. So really, what are the skills that we can teach them and how do those apply to their quality of life? Mm-hmm. Those are the sorts of things that we're asking. So we have 6 categories. They have a survey. It's 18 questions. So 3 questions per category. It's pretty quick. And so we just rolled it out in April of 2023. So we're in our second survey response phase right now. I have about 50 mm-hmm. surveys that I've gotten a second response out of initial responses.
Yeah. Excellent. And I think that this is a really interesting place for you to say, all right, we had this overarching question. We wanted to measure quality of life. And I love that that's not necessarily something your funders were asking, but it mm-hmm. it lays underneath everything that they are measuring and supporting, where you're saying, this is why we want to do it. Tell me a little bit more about how you got to the point that even I need to design a quality of life survey. I mean, that's not a foregone conclusion that that's how you want to collect data, or that you're going to design something yourself. So if we back up a little bit as well and just look at, all right, so you have this question about quality of life. How did you go about deciding that this was something you needed to measure, right? That it needed to be quantifiable, and mm-hmm. that you were going to design your own survey to do that. You know, there's a lot of decisions that had to happen in there and a lot of navigation. Yeah. And I'm curious how you made it through all of that.
So initially I was staunchly opposed to the idea of a survey, because I'm like, death by survey. I don't mm-hmm. want to be part of that. I'm not feeding into that at all. So I was like, anything but a survey is kind of how we started. So really then it's like asking those questions, like what is quality of life? And then I met with a professor at our local university and I talked to them about it. And I said, so we're thinking about trying to figure out how we measure quality of life, but we're not really sure how we go about it. You know, what suggestions might you have? And so they said, oh, I have some, you know, validated scales. And I was like, okay, well, I'll look at them. And I looked at them, but in order to really get the breadth of information we would have wanted, we would have been giving learners like 10 scales multiple times throughout their journey with us. And that just seemed way too much. Mm-hmm. I think that nonprofits have a tendency to ask a lot from their clients. And we're aware of that too. So really trying to be respectful of the information we ask them to share and not just ask so much. So I knew pretty quickly that that doesn't feel like us. Part of it was asking the facilitators, how can you gather this information? Mm-hmm. What makes sense? If we think about fitting it into a workflow, mm-hmm. like when can you remember to do this? And so we sort of have ideas like you want, you know, a baseline. So what is it when someone starts out in programming? What does it look like as they're exiting programming? Those are the pretty standard ones. Some of our programs people might be in for a couple of years. Like if you're doing your adult high school diploma, that's a 2-year process. So I don't want to just do a pre and a post. So throughout the journey, but then also how does the facilitator get stuff from whatever it is that we're asking? Is it an interview? Is it a storyboard activity? Like I didn't know at this point, but how can they use that maybe within their interactions with the individuals too, to help them? So we kind of went back and forth and we decided as a team, a survey made the most sense, especially if it's not going to take a lot of time. So something that would not be super time consuming was a key. So we said, okay, let's go with a survey, but not a survey with a bunch of open-ended questions. So all the questions are on a scale. And then there's just that one question at the end, something that I'm proud of, because we all like that. The questions that came from, first of all, figuring out like, what are we measuring? So what are these categories between the learners, between the team, that we feel like make up a quality of life. And, you know, you look at things like a wheel of life and they're all similar, but a little bit different. So the ones that we settled on were confidence and empowerment, motivation to achieve, expanded possibilities, a sense of belonging and community, health and basic needs. A lot of people talk about like Maslow's hierarchy, like you need to have housing before you can do other things. Personally, I don't know if I fully buy into that because I've seen learners that are completely homeless show up every single day in programming and be our most committed, and they don't have any of those basic needs met. So it's just, that was sort of a thing, but it was a thing that came up often, right? And then if these are the categories, what do each of those things mean to us? So we talked about it a lot. And then in the dog meetings that we have, those are working sessions. So I really had the dog define the categories based on all of the information. They wrote them out and then we wordsmithed them as a group. And then we brought them to the larger staff and said, does this make sense? Mm-hmm. And once people said, yeah, I feel like that does make sense. And no, you're not really missing anything. And I understand what that means. We showed it to some learners and said, does this make sense? And when the learners can understand, which is important because a lot of individuals that come to our organization struggle with literacy. So making things accessible is really important. So we try to write things somewhere between a grade 4 and 6 reading level. When you're thinking about words like empowerment, that's a big word. So what does that really mean? And what language would we be teaching them while they're with us that they can understand the questions? And then from there, we developed the questions and we decided maximum 3 questions per category so that it doesn't take someone like an hour to do this. We want it to be fast. That was sort of the original, I guess that's kind of how it evolved. We also are building a learner management system. So an online learning tool for our learners to be able to see, you know, what have they achieved? Where are they going? We also wanted to make sure that when the survey was completed, there was something that the learner could take away to look at. So we did go with a wheel. We played around with all kinds of ideas, like our organization symbol is a tree. So we were like, oh, what if the branches grow at different, you know, lengths and stuff, but then it got really messy really fast. So a wheel is easy. So it was something simple because you can see quickly, like, where are you out of balance? You know, if your wheel is super lopsided, where is it lopsided? Mm-hmm. And the way that the questions are posed to the learner is not to say, like, if someone says, I'm a 1 in this area, that's mm-hmm. bad, but that just doesn't sound like me right now. So it's always with an opportunity that it can be more like you if that's something that you want. So when they get their wheel, they bring that into a coaching session with their facilitator or their coach, and then they talk about it. And it's really an open-ended conversation. Someone may be really high in motivation, but say, I still want to focus on that. And that's okay. So we let the learners direct their path, but the information we're looking at as an organization. So we're kind of using it in 2 ways. It's a coaching tool. So the facilitators get something out of it. The survey gives us information as an organization to see, like, are we having an impact? We think that we are. Part of the reason that we even endeavored on this is because we often would say it's those small intangible things that really make a difference. But how do you measure that? Not everyone's going to get a full-time job, but that doesn't mean that their life hasn't changed, right? Mm-hmm. And if the funder is mostly concerned about those jobs, how do we prove that some of those middle or intermediate outcomes is what we call them? How are those important? How are they feeding into the overarching story? And so part of it was to say, like, there's value in everything that we're doing. I guess that's kind of where it came from. I'm realizing I'm getting to the answer at the end of my story, but...
No, and you sort of snuck something in there that I think is really important for people to pay attention to, is this idea that you made sure the data you were collecting were not only incredibly, I would even say invaluable, right? Like our weird English language, that you've gone beyond just valuable. And this is just like irreplaceable, that you're measuring something so core and essential to your organization and empowering your team and your organization to really, like you said, measure the things that matter, even if, and I'll put that in air quotes, they're intermediate steps, which you know are going to have a higher chance of leading to these ultimate outcomes and have achieved something themselves, because you've still improved somebody's life, even if you haven't gotten them to where you said you wanted to get them. Right. But also this idea that that's valuable to your learners, to your coaches, to the whole process as well. This is not an extractive process, right? A lot of times data ends up being something very extractive, where somebody takes all of this data from somebody, right? All this information gets pulled out. And then the person that you've taken it from never sees it again, or never benefits from it, or never, like, there's no loop. They may not even find out what the final result of that, you know, information process was. And the fact that you're giving every person who takes that survey gets an immediate feedback of, here were your answers, and here's what that says about your spot right now. And not, like you said, that you're bad or we're finding you wanting, just we're giving you a snapshot of where you said you were now. And you can use that to decide, is that where you want to be? Or is there a different place you would like to be? And how can we use this sort of current map to take you where you're wanting to go? And that is an extraordinary thing, to have the data that drives your organization also help support your team and the people who are using your services so intimately and in such a seamless manner. That's an extraordinary thing to have put in place.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, for me, it's more like, for me, it was always, how will the team buy into doing this? Mm-hmm. And part of it is they have to get something from it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And it can't feel like extra work.
Right.
And so part of things not feeling extra is looking at the processes that are already happening and figuring out what can we let go of. And so we've done a lot of slashing and slicing and said, that's, we don't want to ask things that way anymore. Let's just move on. But you have to be able to let go of things, which, you know, that's a process in and of itself.
Especially with data, because we do want to try to have everything. We think, well, what if we need this 2 years from now? What if we need this and we haven't collected it today? Like, oh no, I feel like it's like me with my junk drawer that I don't want to throw anything out, because I know as soon as I throw something out, then I'll need it again. But to your point with data, that when we do that, though, there's a cost. There's a cost to every data point that you collect. And the fact that you've done such good, deep work to figure out, what is the value of this particular data point versus the cost that we pay? And also the people who are submitting this data, this, giving us this information, what do they pay in having to take the time to do that? And that you've really narrowed in on that highest value in terms of, you know, what you get from it, what your learners will get from it, what your team gets from it, for the cost that it takes to actually achieve that. Now, you've described some extraordinary successes. I'm curious, what were some of the barriers or challenges that you ran into in developing this amazing process?
Well, I think that every process has lots of challenges and barriers. And part of it is, like, everyone's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then you roll it out and people are like, oh, I didn't do that. And you're like, oh, I thought we had a very clear conversation about this. Okay. So some of it is just like the actual implementation can be messy. Part of it too is just keeping our story, I think, at the forefront of everyone's mind. And so it's very easy to have a meeting, go to a data party, go to a workshop, do a training, and feel really excited and motivated. And then the day-to-day starts to take over, and our learners have a lot of challenges and they bring a lot of things to the table. And so sometimes, you know, people's personal challenges take precedence, and they should, because we're there to help this whole human. But how you continue to integrate things into the job so that you don't lose things is important. And so I think it's always about finding that balance. I'm not striving for perfection. You know, when I meet with youth, when they are getting ready to start in our alternative high school program, I say to them, like, you know, our biggest thing is your attendance. And when you're supposed to be here, we expect you to be here. And you're also a human being. And so we're not asking you to be perfect, but we're asking you to try. And so we ask the same thing as of the team. I'm not asking for perfection from anyone, but I want to see effort. And if someone's struggling, why? And so that's that. I think that's probably the biggest thing. It's funny. I'm like, what were the specific challenges when it came to that survey? I think the biggest challenge was getting the language right. It's great to collaborate, and then suddenly you have eight brains fixating on the word confidence. It's a lot. So at some point you have to be like, we're just using the word confidence. It's fine. And let's move on. And, you know, when you ask for feedback, you have to be prepared to receive feedback. And so sometimes you think something's really good and someone points out a huge issue with it. And then you're like, okay, we have to go back to the beginning. That's why this took over a year. It's not like the first time we wrote the survey, everyone was like, that is the most perfect survey I've ever seen. Amazing. And then they just launched it. It wasn't like that. There were a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, a lot of concerns. Like, are we asking the learners for too much? is this appropriate? Mm-hmm. Are we being respectful? And so really talking through those things mm-hmm. and figuring that out was important. But one of the things that I do as a team for the team every 6 weeks, I send out a data tidbit. So it's just like a quick little, it almost looks like an Instagram post or something. So it's a little snapshot of information. I make them on Canva. You can get a Canva Pro account for free if you're a nonprofit, which is amazing. So you have access to all of the pretty things. And I always try to create some conversation. And so as we were rolling out the survey, one of the data tidbits was the categories for the quality of life survey mm-hmm. and then questions about them. Like, what are we missing if we only ask about these things? What's the risk about mm-hmm. asking these questions? You know, are we being true to who we say we are? These kinds mm-hmm. of things. And now we're sharing results and stuff. So mm-hmm. I think just being open. So it's not really necessarily a challenge. I think the biggest challenge is like letting go of your own personal ego and being okay to learn from everyone.
The process you describe reminds me a little bit about like how Michelangelo talks about making David, right? That he's just having to like chip away little bits, right? And chip away a little bit and chip away a little bit, that you don't just like walk up one day and be like, this shall be an incredible statue. And you just like tap the marble and everything falls away and it's perfect, right? Like it's just this constant refinement process, mm-hmm. you know, and that you're standing back and you're looking at it from different angles and you have to go up and make an adjustment. And then someone else comes in and points out that, you know, a bit that you didn't notice wasn't taken care of or wasn't smooth yet. And I think that long-term process is one that we're not always prepared for mm-hmm. when we come up to this. Like you said, we might get some great buy-in. We might have everyone really excited to do it. And then there is this sort of period of a long slog that you just have to spend the time to have those discussions and ask those questions. And then at some point, you have to just agree this is good enough and we're gonna try it, and then we can come back and refine it if we need to, but we got to put it in place or we won't actually get anywhere.
Yes, it's about finding that balance between like making it amazing and making it good for now. And so like I think there's a saying, it's something like best is the enemy of better.
Yeah.
And so for me it's like, let's just make it better. So that we can, it's not going to be perfect and that's okay. So after about a year, we'll probably revisit it and say mm-hmm. like, is this even doing what we want it to? I mean, mm-hmm. I hope that the answer is yes, because I've, you know, put a lot of my own blood, sweat and tears into it, I think. But if it's not, then okay. So what have we learned and where do we go from mm-hmm. here? And I think that those are the key questions to ask and to be okay with asking. Mm-hmm.
So you've described long and beautiful process that is very real. We talked before we hopped on about being a realist sometimes about what it really takes to succeed here. But I think the optimism is also equally important, that you have a vision and you know where you're headed. I would be curious if you could make one recommendation in terms of something you would want other nonprofits who are behind you, they're looking at this journey, thinking this might be where they want to go. What would be the one thing you would want them to learn from your work and your experience?
I think something you said at the beginning is you don't have to have a bunch of letters behind your name to know how to do things. And I think that's really true. You are the experts of your own organization. You know what you do better than anyone else. So use your team, use your clients, use the people that are intimately involved with the organization to say, what are we doing here? Right. I think that the funding relationship can be challenging sometimes, because a funder will say, you have to report on this, but you know that you do so much more. So make sure that the way that you report to your funder is as clean and simple for you as possible, so that you have time to think about these things. And I would say just pick one thing that you're really curious about. I'm confident mm-hmm. that every organization there's one conversation you have all the time. There was a learner who we pay incentives in our program. So there was a learner who was out for a walk with his facilitator and said to her one day, I brought home milk and bread to my family last week. And that's mm-hmm. the first time I've ever contributed to the household. And it made me feel so amazing. That story is something that we've all been obsessed with as an organization. How do you capture that How do you actually capture it without the learner, without the facilitator being like, that is, I'm just going to write that down, because you want those conversations to be natural and right. for someone to feel safe when, as you're going shopping for our food pantry with your teacher, to be able to share that and not feel like, oh, now I'm a case study or whatever. So keeping it human, but think about those things, those gnawing issues that you always talk about or figure or say, why don't they care about this? Those are the things that you should probably focus on, because those are the things that people are passionate about.
And that goes back to the fact that you added, you know, you had scales so that it's consistent and you'll have trackable information that's reportable and you can aggregate it and understand the story as a whole across your organization. But you added that one question at the end of what are you proud of? Because it goes back to what you just said of here is something this person was so proud of, and you needed to be able to capture that in the learner's own words. So you give that opportunity at the end of the survey and that's for you. That's for your organization and your group and your team to be able to see that.
It is. It's also for the learner, because when they get their survey, so when someone leaves programming and they see, if they've been with us for a couple of years, they can have an opportunity if they want to reflect on all of them. And every time they've said they're proud about something, that will be shown back to them. And so they'll have maybe 4, 5, 6, 8 things that they're proud of, or even 2 things. But it's really cool. Even when someone does it on day one, some of the things that they say is like, I'm proud that I made it here. I'm proud that I came, even though I was scared. And so to be able to look back on that, you know, 3 months down the road and be like, wow, I was already proud of myself on day one. And now here's something else that I can say that I've achieved. And so that for us is so important, because we want the learners to like own their journey and to feel proud of themselves and to know that they have value, because a lot of the people we work with have been told the opposite of that.
No, well, thank you so much for sharing this incredible journey. If folks listening want to learn more about you, about your incredible organization, where can we send them?
So you can check out the Learning Exchange website, sjle.com. You can reach out to me anytime. You can find me on LinkedIn, Erin McKenney, or you can send me an email, erin.mckenney@sjle. And you can follow us on Facebook. We have one person that does our social media. We're starting to integrate some data stuff in there. But if you reach out on Facebook, they know who I am if you want to talk to me, or you can ask anyone a question.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. This is awesome. I appreciate it.
Erin did such an incredible job walking us through this journey, taking her organization into an outcomes-oriented organization. And I love how she really does illustrate that this is not a one and done. It is a continuing process. And it's also not a process about being perfect. It's about doing the work that you can in front of you and trying, taking your best guess at it or taking your best step forward and refining it as you continue to work forward. And I feel like Erin did such a wonderful job making this journey approachable, that we don't have to be, you know, credentialed or have all those fancy letters, that you can take the expertise you already have in your organization and something that you are deeply curious about with your organization and translate that into meaningful measurements that help you improve your program for those that you serve. So I hope that you take the moment to ask yourself, what are you curious about? What would being outcomes driven look like for your program or your nonprofit or the change that you're trying to see? And can you invite those around you to join in this collaborative effort to help you amplify your impact? So thank you so much for listening today. I wish you the best on your data journey. You have been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Moroccanus, an analytics education, consulting, and data services company devoted to helping nonprofits and social enterprises amplify their impacts and thrive through data. You can learn more at moroccanos.com, MERAKINOS.com.